Serial murders kill three or more. Could be seven. Could be four. For those driven by lust, erotophonophilia is a must. And they get turned on by the gore.
Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymee Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, what is serial murder? Welcome and thanks for joining us. Hello, Ben.
Hi, Tymee.
Just to note that today's episode contains descriptions of violence, including sexual violence, so please listen with caution. Good, good. Ben, how about we play a little serial murder, true or false?
Ooh, this sounds good. Sounds like a Saw or something like, do you want to play a game?
Oh, is that from Saw?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I looked it up right before this just to be sure.
Okay, good.
Or Scream, what's your favorite scary movie? But do you want to play a game, serial killer, true or false?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
I'm going to give you a statement and you tell me whether you think it's true or false and why.
Okay,
first, most serial killers are highly intelligent.
I feel like I want to say true because we see a lot, like Ted Bundy, we think of him as being like super smart and intelligent, and then all of these like serial killer movies are like cat and mouse games, so they portray them as like super intelligent. I'm tempted to say that, but I think I'm going to say false.
Yes.
Like that's probably an exaggeration.
Of course. Mm-hmm. The most intelligent, organized, the ones that have high body counts, et cetera, those are the ones that Netflix makes documentaries and docudramas about, right?
Most
serial killers, average intelligence, right?
But I know we're going to talk about Jeffrey Dahmer a lot this week and on the next episode.
Yes.
But even in he wasn't that smart.
No.
Like he just had a whole lot of luck and privilege.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay. Number two, serial killers have high body counts, usually dozens of victims before they are caught.
I would say false. I think that we also probably have an exaggeration of the number of people that serial killers kill.
Indeed. The average is between 3 and 7. Serial killers are highly mobile.
False. I'm pretty confident on this one. So I did some in undergrad, some crime mapping and geospatial stuff. And, they have their hunting territory, which is actually usually pretty close to their homes where they live.
Correct. And it could be city, region, as we'll talk about with the shopping cart killer. They're not traveling across state lines. They're not Ted Bundy who killed in 6 or 7 states. Serial killers are driven by a compulsion to kill and will not stop unless arrested or killed themselves.
Well, this is tricky because there are several parts to this. I would say the compulsion part is probably true, depending upon a lot of the typologies, some typologies.
Yes.
But the second part of the statement I would say would be false, because I do know that serial killers a lot of times do stop on their own.
Yes, and there are, of course, famous cases of Dennis Rader, BTK, getting himself caught, which we can talk about at some point. But also, yes, they do stop killing. Compulsion, I think it kind of, it depends on how you define compulsion. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But it is kind of like an addiction. But yes, they can and do stop.
Mm-hmm.
Last one. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Serial killers are insane.
I'm crying foul on the question.
Yes.
Insane is a legal term.
Correct.
Not a psychological term.
Correct.
So I'm not exactly sure what you're asking, Professor Castle, with your trick question. But I'm going to say false. Maybe if it said serial killers are psychopaths, I would probably say true to that.
Well, I'll come back to that. But yeah, so as you said, insanity is a legal definition. So that word is used in, you know, for legal insanity is what we call it. And
in the courtroom.
In the courtroom, right. Mm-hmm. And so the estimates are between 1-2% would actually of serial killers, which is already a really small number, would be able to meet the criteria for legal insanity. So it's a very, very small number. And we can talk about insanity defenses at some point, which would be interesting. But I want to come back to...
But it's not a mental health term. So like a psychiatrist is not going to say like you insane.
No. So when somebody says like Charles Manson, who didn't kill anybody, by the way, was insane. It's like, no, well, kind of depends on what you're talking about. So most people think about psychopathy, which you mentioned. Psychopathy is marked by very shallow emotional responses, impulsivity, a lack of empathy, which is what most people think about when they think about psychopaths. So it's a lack of empathy. And an increased likelihood of antisocial behavior. Now, there's a lot to this and antisocial personality disorder, which we could talk about in a separate episode. We don't have time to do that here since we're introducing serial murder. But I just wanted to briefly mention that that's what most people think about, is the serial killer is not insane, but is really a psychopath. The research, however, on homicide and psychopathy, that nexus is actually pretty mixed. Psychopathy is estimated at 1% in the general population, but considered to be higher in prison incarcerated populations. It has been shown to predict future violence and reoffense rates. But in studies of homicide offenders, researchers find that, you know, you might see psychopathic traits in more of the planned instrumental types of homicide and violence. But in the largest study across five countries, Fox and DeLisi found that psychopathy was significant and linked to homicide. So it could be considered a risk factor. If the crime was very violent, extreme, or horrific, then that relationship was stronger. And interestingly, psychopathy scores are higher in the United States. That being said, other studies have found that serial killers are on par with the general incarcerated population in terms of this trait. And so it really kind of calls into question whether or not this this connection is really as relevant for serial killers. It might just be the same.
So is that true or false? Serial killers are psychopaths. True or false?
Yes. So that's difficult to answer.
Again, a trick question.
It is, because serial killers, there are as many serial killers who are not, who would not meet all of the traits of psychopathy. So let's get into that in a different episode, because we have way too much to talk about in this one. We're introducing serial murder, which is defined based on the number of victims, like mass murder. So recall, with mass murder, it was four or more in one event. But for serial murder, it's two or three victims over an extended period of time in separate events, with what we call, or the FBI has called, a cooling off period. So there's some time. There's disagreement among scholars and law enforcement and the FBI about whether it should be two victims or three victims, for different reasons. But focusing on the number of victims, this puts people who kill multiple people because of a financial incentive in the same category as our lust murderers, which we're getting ready to talk about. So the death house landlady.
My nightmare next door neighbor on Netflix or something like that.
Yes. Dorothea Puente was charged with killing nine people for their social security checks in California in the 1980s. So she would be in the same category as what we call lust murderers, or erotophonophilia, which I will focus more on today because that is what everyone thinks about when they think of serial killers, thanks to shows like Criminal Minds.
I remember specifically asking you this question a long time ago when like the show came out. I was watching, like, she killed nine people. Is she a serial killer? Because she doesn't do it for like the thrill or the sexual excitement of it.
So, let's talk about the term itself. So the first time serial murder was used in the United States to describe these types of murders was by the FBI in relation to the 1977 Son of Sam case, who shot, he shot random couples in New York City. Until then, lust murderers or other serial killing was just referred to as mass killing, which is confusing, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or stranger killing. Mm-hmm. So most of the information that we have about serial murder comes from one very large database. It's the Radford University, which is right down the road, and the Florida Gulf Coast University. So they kind of went together to maintain this database. Mm-hmm. It's a serial killer database. It contains information on over 150 variables for over 5,000 offenders and 14,000 victims. Hmm. So it is the largest. So the database does show a rapid growth in the 1970s and 80s in the number, but that actually could be due more to data accessibility and quality of record keeping, because what also happened is that the study of serial murder became formalized by the FBI's brand new behavioral science unit, BSU, mm-hmm. which is featured in some of these, and Criminal mm-hmm. Minds is mm-hmm. based on that. Mm-hmm. It helped with the issue of linkage blindness. You know what that is, correct?
No.
Linkage blindness is when cases, because of like jurisdiction issues, cases are not linked mm-hmm. when they mm-hmm. actually should be. So the formalization of the study of serial murder by the FBI, you have one unit taking it mm-hmm. over. They were able to make connections between cases that they would not have been before. Mm-hmm. So you mm-hmm. see an increase in the numbers in terms of serial murder. Mm-hmm. But in fact, the trend that we see with these numbers just basically mirrors the overall increase in violent crime during that period.
Yeah, because so like the late 80s and early 90s was you know, like the highest level of crime we've ever seen, at least in terms of keeping track of crime stats.
Yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. But this is, for anyone who has watched Mindhunters on Netflix, this is a bit accurate in that the FBI had a vested interest organizationally inflating these numbers, because they were receiving funding for the BSU mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. they needed to have to show that it was needed and necessary. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, hey, there's this problem that only we can solve, right? That we can mm-hmm. work on. So back to the numbers, the decline in serial murder in the 1990s also coincided with DNA and other forensic techniques. But overall, serial murder is rare, although you would not know that if you watch mm-hmm. all of these television shows or mm-hmm. listen to podcasts.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this in our first episode, or the What is Criminology episode, that Criminal Minds is like the worst perpetrator of this, because it's about the BAU. Yes. And so like every town in America has serial killers, and they've probably at this point cycled through. So like now they're going back right. to towns. We've got a new serial every town.
Yeah, no, yeah, a serial killer in every town.
or more than one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, if we're just defining serial killers based on the number of people killed, you've got, like, financial crime, you've got hitmen, organized crime, and yes. that really isn't what we think of when we think of, like, serial killers. So we're going to focus on the lust murderers
yes.
or the erotophonophilics, which we'll define in a moment yes. in this episode. But what does that mean, lust murder or erotophonophilics?
Yeah.
And what makes them different?
Say that three times fast. Mm-hmm. I have my students do that. Mm. Lust murder is sexual homicide, where a sexual act or sexually symbolic act occurs at the same time as the murder. So not all lust murders are an example of erotophonophilia, which is the sexual arousal being contingent on the death of the person and not just killing mm-hmm. someone because you've sexually assaulted them and then you don't want to get caught.
Right. So it's more than just like a sex crime, like you are sexually assaulting or raping somebody and then killing them to keep them from turning you in or telling
them. Correct.
But actually the sexual gratification is from the violence and the murder.
The death, yes.
Itself, right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So this is what psychologists refer to as paraphilic behavior. Mm-hmm. And paraphilias are intense sexual arousal to atypical mm-hmm. objects or fantasies. Mm-hmm. So in this case, that atypical fantasy is the death of another mm-hmm. person.
Yeah, so you've mentioned a couple of terms, paraphilia and erotophonophilia. And I have a little geeky interest in etymology, word origin. So here's a little Greek geek for you, just to kind of help break you down, help break down these terms.
And yeah.
So paraphilia comes from the Greek, and para is, you know, kind of means like alongside of or contrary to, or in this case, abnormal.
Yes.
And philia is one of the Greek words for love.
Yes.
And we see that in Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love,
that's
philosophy.
Yes.
The love of wisdom.
Yes.
Or paraphilia, which we're going to talk about, or actually, you know,
Yes.
Erotophonophilia is the next one. And eros is another word for Greek love, like erotic.
Yes.
Use that term. Erotic. So erotus and phonos is murder, and then philia is love. So paraphilia, abnormal love, abnormal sexual desires, and erotophonophilia is the erotic gratification of murder.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So one way to think about this is that the person has made a connection between murder and sexual gratification. So, you know, what we could also call like orgasmic conditioning. So you're becoming conditioned to, you know, orgasm that is contingent on the death of the person. So some, but not all, serial murderers or lust murderers specifically are sexual sadists, meaning they are sexually aroused by the suffering and the pain that the other person is experiencing. For some, it's simply the act of murder that's associated with the sexual gratification, but for others, there needs to be violence and mutilation of the body or sexual organs. Mm-hmm. So this is where we come back to the role of fantasy, because it's really important to lust murder. It plays an important role, according to scholars who have interviewed serial killers. Very famous serial killers like Ted Bundy reported an active fantasy life where he became preoccupied with sadistic and controlling sexual fantasies. And when an individual has these, it increases the risk of murderous behavior, because the fantasies act as a cognitive rehearsal for the murder itself. So what happens is that you enhance the fantasy to more closely approximate reality. And when you do this, you disassociate. So when you disassociate, you block out everything else around you, and you're only like in having this fantasy reenactment. Mm-hmm. It makes it more real, and you're able to experience it more fully. And so then the individual might increase the frequency.
So this dissociation, are they doing that when they're fantasizing or when they're actually carrying out the act?
Well, yeah, later it is going to be when they're carrying. But right now we're still in the fantasy part.
Okay, gotcha. No murder has happened yet. Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
So this is how you sort of build up to the first time they end up killing someone. You increase the frequency and intensity of the experiences, and then they're spending more time there. So they're spending more time in their fantasies, disassociating, and now the edges between fantasy and reality blur. This is where violent pornography comes into play, because rape, torture, murder, that kind of violent pornography is common among lust murderers. It plays a role in the fantasy itself, but it also may have been what triggered that initial sexual arousal to violence and brutality. So both souvenirs from crime scenes, from victims, and violent pornography are connected to fantasy. And the souvenirs taken from the murder scene allow them to relive that experience, which further strengthens the fantasy element.
Yeah, and there's a strong connection between violent pornography and sexual aggression, which was one of the things that I was kind of, you know, thinking about, talking about earlier. Research has shown that men who consume a steady diet of violent pornography are more aggressive, more sexually aroused, and more desensitized to the plot of victims of sexual assault.
Yes, correct. But lust killers initiate violence for pleasure and erotic stimulation, and driven by this arousal, they can become predatory. The greater the intensity of the pleasure, then the more likely the behavior will be repeated, because neurochemicals are at work here. Dopamine, norepinephrine levels surge in situations where you have novelty, which is a new sensation. And this triggers our brain's reward system. So what happens is that the brain adapts to this. The novelty or newness decreases. The dopamine flattens. And so the individual seeks more stimulation, which makes one vulnerable to addiction. So it ends up feeling better to act out the impulse than to inhibit it. Mm-hmm. And this is what scholars mean when they discuss the compulsion to kill. So paraphilias, of which this is one, are sexual impulse disorders, as we mentioned before. And this includes things like necrophilia, which I think some listeners might have heard of, or be aware as having an atypical sexual arousal from a corpse. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to kill someone in order to satisfy this impulse, because you can get someone to consensually play dead, mm-hmm. right? To kind of play this out.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Dahmer is one of the most famous serial killers who has recently been the subject of both a documentary and docudrama on Netflix. He did engage in sexual acts with the corpses of the men he killed, but he also wanted to keep the skeletons as souvenirs, which led to the various ways he was trained to bleach and use acid to retain the skulls and genitals. We could do a separate episode on paraphilias alone, because there's too much to explore here. But some of the most famous serial killers, it's because of this behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... another callback to our first episode. You asked me then if the murder of the, you know, four college students in Idaho was a mass murder or a serial murder. And we talked there about how it meets the definition of mass murder based on, you know, what we talked about in the mass murder episode.
Correct.
But it's also similar to serial murder, because you've got like a stranger breaking into a house, killing people intimately with a knife.
Right. So when we look at the serial killer database, we see just how rare it is for a knife to be the weapon of choice, even for serial killers, because less than 13% of all offenders use it to kill. So it could be used to torture, mutilate, and control the victim, but most serial killers do kill their victims with guns. Strangling is the second most common method of killing victims.
Really?
Yes.
I would have totally guessed strangling was the first.
Well, it doesn't mean that they don't strangle, right? It's about what ends up
what
causes
the death. Yeah. But I still would have said like strangling was the first, knife was the second. So if you added most serial killers kill their victims with guns to the true false question, I would have totally got that one wrong, because I would definitely have said false. No way.
Yes.
No way most serial killers are using guns to kill their victims.
Yeah, right. So mass murderers tend to have some connection with their choice of location and or victims, right? So we're talking about the knife, because it's so unusual, and that was what was used in the Idaho murders. Mm-hmm. In this case, there hasn't been a connection reported, so at this point, it's still considered a stranger homicide for all we know. So we're talking about four deaths by stabbing in a very short window, and it was not reported that there was any evidence of sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
So the motivation in this case may be more power revenge, without a sexual element, but we just don't know enough yet.
So it does not seem to kind of fit the erotophonophile profile.
No.
The lust murder profile.
No.
Mm-hmm. One local example that does fit the lust murder category would be the shopping cart killer, Harrisonburg's very own.
Correct.
Anthony Robinson, he was apprehended in November of 2021. He's been dubbed the shopping cart killer.
Yes.
This was right around Thanksgiving. I remember talking about this at Thanksgiving. He was arrested and charged with killing two women, Aline Redman and Tonita Smith.
Yes.
But he's been linked to the death of four more women, but not been charged in those crimes yet.
Right.
But I thought about this also earlier when you talked about kind of like linkage blindness, because he's kind of been all over the place, maybe in New York and in Northern Virginia, in Harrisonburg and Charlottesville. So there are victims kind of all over the place that they're kind of trying to trace to him, that initially probably would not show up as a linkage because different police departments are investigating these murders.
Correct. And then he wouldn't have been defined as a serial killer because they're, you know, depending on how many victims there were total.
But he was staying at the Howard Johnson here in town. He met these women on Plenty of Fish, a dating site, invited them to his hotel room, killed them, and then disposed of their bodies nearby by using a shopping cart. And there's apparently video footage of Robinson and one of the victims entering his hotel room, and then later he comes out wheeling quote-unquote body-sized packages in a shopping cart.
Yes.
So the latest update is that Robinson's attorney is asking for a delay in court proceedings because the insanity report has not been completed. So we talked about insanity earlier.
Right.
So he is, you know, they're considering the insanity defense. He's been evaluated by a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but they're waiting on the doctor to file the report. So that's a local connection, sad, awful.
But yeah, they need to complete the forensic evaluation. But here's a good example of how he's not going to make the definition of legal insanity, because mm-hmm. if, especially if they can tie him to these murders in these mm-hmm. other locations, mm-hmm. he premeditated, yeah, he moved yeah. locations, like mm-hmm. somebody who's experiencing a psychotic break or something is mm-hmm. not going to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. It also, because he dumped both bodies at one time, but obviously killed them on two separate occasions, means mm-hmm. that he had one of the bodies in the hotel room.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yes, when he had mm-hmm. the other person over. So I think mm-hmm. one of the charges is related to the corpse mm-hmm. and for mm-hmm. that reason. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's a lovely note to end on.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, I think that's all for today.
Okay. Well, we'll close our show then with our Minute to Spin It, where we each give our 30-second takeaway from today's show. So time me in just a minute. What's your spin?
So mm-hmm. my spin is, you might have a crush on the actor Evan Peters because of the Netflix show, but let's not forget that the real Dahmer's victims were members of marginalized groups, mostly young gay men of color.
Yeah.
You should not be empathizing with him because mm-hmm. of good casting. Nope. Don't become a hybristophilic by developing a sexual interest in people who commit crimes.
Hybristophilic. Oh, we got another one here. Yes. And that means?
A sexual attraction to people mm-hmm. who are like
so
murderers.
Like the people who write love letters to serial killers in
yes.
prison.
Gotcha, yes, gotcha. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Ben, what's mm-hmm. your spin?
Okay, so I have been listening to a podcast on Star Trek Voyager, okay. where two of the actors rewatch and review episodes.
Okay.
And one of the gimmicks that they do on that podcast is they, you know, rewatch the episode and then they do a poetry synopsis. Okay. So one does a haiku and one does a limerick. So my spin today is going to be a limerick. I wrote a limerick.
Okay.
Serial murders kill three or more. Could be seven. Could be four. For those driven by lust, erotophonophilia is a must, and they get turned on by the gore.
That's good. I love that.
Thank you. Thank yeah. you very much. Just my own serial killer limerick.
Good job. This podcast is sponsored by the Gandhi Center at JMU, which relies on support from generous donors like yourselves. If you would like to throw a few bucks to the Gandhi Center to support our educational programming, please click on the link in our show notes. Send justice topic suggestions via DM on IG at Gandhi Center JMU, or you can tweet at us or DM us mm-hmm. on Twitter at Just a Minute Pod. Right now, our only suggestions come from Diane Falk. So
yeah, and we're getting close to the end of our topic list. So
oh, yeah.
we need some more topics. Send us some topics, yo.